Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live for Fan for Racing NASCAR and Race Talk Review. We're reviewing both Road America and Douglas County Speedway tonight. And joining me to do that is our co-host, James Bickford. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be back for the third week now and wrapping everything up. Hopefully we get to talk about some racing and speak to our drivers, Kyle Benjamin, Reed Wilson, and Todd Gillen. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. We've got a big lineup here tonight, starting with Todd Gilliland, who won at Douglas County Speedway on a Saturday night. Big, big win and a big, big race. I've heard a lot of really great things. This was really good, hard racing between two K&N West champions. Were you there by any chance, James?
I wish I was, and I'm actually looking forward to asking Todd about how the race went because I wasn't able to watch it. And I heard it was a really exciting finish. I heard it was a great race. I saw on Twitter and social media that Chris and Todd had some great racing. I saw some pictures. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him and speaking to him about how the race went and how it ended up in the exciting fashion that it did.
Absolutely. And fans are going to want to really mark their DVRs for this race, because it will air on NBC Sports Network on Saturday, September the 2nd, I believe it is, for the replay of this race. Not the replay, but for the airing, the first airing of this race. It's a delayed broadcast, and they will have that on air this Saturday, September the 2nd. And, boy, I tell you, this is one you do not want to miss. It will be at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, and that would be 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. Definitely race to watch for all fans of racing. Also, Austin Terrio won this weekend out at Road America. And that was a big victory for him. He's doing everything he can to keep a gap in the series points lead there.
Yeah, the race week in general was so exciting, from Austin winning to Todd stating his dominance at Douglas County to Jeremy Clements, one of the biggest stories of this week, underfunded team, a family-owned team, winning an Xfinity race in the fashion that it did. It was so amazing to see that very final battle with Matt Tift and him and Jeremy spinning on the last lap and still being able to take over the lead and win it. It in racing in general, it was just such a fantastic week. A lot of stories to talk about, and Austin is just another guest that we've had on before that, you know, comes home successful at Road America.
I know, and a couple of our listeners, when they heard that Austin wasn't going to be on tonight, let me know that they were really hoping to hear from him. So I promise I will try to see if we can't get Austin Terrio on the show sometime soon. So definitely look forward to talking to him when that happens. Now, our guest at 9 o'clock, though, is Kyle Benjamin. He's a Joe Gibbs Racing development driver, and he's had a lot of success this season, and I'm really looking forward to catching up with Kyle Benjamin.
Yeah, he's been one of those stories to talk about, along with Ryan Preece as a driver at Joe Gibbs making his mark. Kyle Benjamin has done a fantastic job since he's come in and been able to make his mark in the Xfinity Series, and really surprised everyone just as Ryan Preece did. It just shows that with the right driver and the right equipment, you can make an impact in the sport as high as the Xfinity level in series. So really looking forward to talking to him and seeing how his transition from being at different teams and finally ending up at a very high caliber team in the Xfinity Series, how he has adjusted to that and been as successful as he is now.
You're exactly right. He's got a win at Greenville Pickens in the K&N East. He has a win at Winchester in the ARCA Racing Series, and he came in second at Iowa Speedway to Ryan Preece in the Xfinity Series. So a big, big year for Kyle Benjamin. Then at 9:30, you want to talk about your guest at 9:30?
So I have a good friend, Reed Wilson, coming on. He's made impacts within the K&N Series and hopefully making a Truck Series debut towards the end of this year. So looking forward to talking to him about his plans going forward, trying to make that breakthrough into the National Series racing. He's had a couple great finishes with the Young's Motorsports team and the 66 car with True North as a sponsor, and they've done a fantastic job so far this season, trying to race fully, full time in the K&N Series, but unfortunately, just been resorted to a part time to just focus their efforts towards the Camping World Truck Series. But really looking forward to hearing it. Him. He had a podcast earlier, which struck interest with me, where he gained a lot of traction because of his personality. So it'd be fun to talk to him. Fun for listeners to listen in and hear about a driver they might not have heard of before. And get to know him a little bit better. So looking forward to talking to him and seeing what his thoughts are going forward into the Truck Series and that National Series racing breakthrough that we've seen so many drivers do in the past year.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm looking forward to learning more about Reed Wilson during our 9:30 half hour. I agree that there's a lot of highlights from the weekend of racing, and probably one of the biggest ones was seeing Jeremy Clements come home with a victory in the Xfinity Series at Road America. That was pretty fantastic, and not only did he win that race, but there were some other drivers that we don't normally get to see up at the front right up there with him. Michael Annett came in second. Matt Tift finished third. Justin Marks fourth, and Brendan Gaughan rounds out that top 10. Really fantastic finishes for all five of those drivers.
Yeah, and it doesn't even end there for excitement. We have the NASCAR throwback, which I'm looking so forward to at Darlington. I've seen a lot of great paint schemes that are going into that next week on the race in Darlington. So I'm looking forward to seeing all the throwback schemes, whether it's the Xfinity Series trucks. I saw Brennan Gaughan is doing a throwback truck scheme in that 62. Dylan Lupton, that we spoke with last week, is doing the rainbow car. And just so many drivers really playing into it. We had Ryan Blaney at one point wear no gloves in practice and, you know, walk up with an open-face helmet. He didn't drive with it, but I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody get into spirit at Darlington. And on that note, we also have only 2 weeks of racing left until playoffs. With three spots left after all those different winning drivers. And a lot of big names that are trying to break into the playoffs, names you wouldn't expect, like Matt Kenseth or Jamie McMurray and Clint Bowyer with the new team. Joey Logano is a huge one, being in the Final Four so many times. And then the new names that have been so successful, like Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, and Daniel Suarez. So really looking forward to seeing what they can do at Darlington to try to lock themselves in. But we're getting close to having our first guest on, so we'll start doing the intros for him.
Yep, we sure will. And I'll tell you what, we will do a preview show all about Darlington on Thursday night with our co-host MJ Huseman. So that starts at 8:30 p.m. on Thursday night, and we'll give you all the details. But joining me now, and joining us now, I should say, is a driver who's just had a phenomenal season in the K&N Pro Series East and West. This weekend, he was racing out at the K&N West in Douglas County Speedway. And from everything I've heard, Todd, it was one of those races that fans will not soon forget. And no one wants to miss when it airs on NBC Sports Network on Saturday night. You guys were battling 9 different lead changes, 4 changes, lead changes in the last 25 laps. Congratulations on a thrilling victory at Douglas County this weekend.
Yeah, thank you. That was a definitely a big one for us, you know. You know, being so close in the points battle as well as, you know, just battling so hard that race, it always feels good to come out on top of such a fierce battle.
It really has been a fierce battle all season long between two champions. You were the last year's champion in the K&N West. Chris Eggleston was the, I believe, the 2014 champion in the K&N West. So you guys, and it might have been 2015, you two have been back and forth all season. In fact, you're the only two winners, with the exception of Kevin Harvick at Sonoma Raceway. Talk about what this season means to you, and how in the world are you ever going to top this?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's whoever comes out on top this year in the K&N West Championship battle, you know, me and Chris Eggleston are both having dream seasons. You know, it really doesn't get much better than this. Being able to battle teammates week in and week out for every win. And like you said, us two winning you know, almost all the races, with Kevin Harvick winning at Sonoma. So, you know, we just got to keep it up. Can't slow down at all. Still got a few more very important races coming up that, you know, we still need to have really good speed at.
That's right. You've got 3 more races now in your season, so fans are not going to want to miss any of them as your season winds down. Another stat that I came across today that really is pretty astounding, Todd, is in your 26 starts, career starts, you have 13 victories in the K&N Pro Series West. That's 50% of the races you've entered that you've won. That's pretty phenomenal. And it's going to be pretty hard to top for any driver to be able to top that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've been very lucky to be driving, you know, for Bill McNally Racing and all 26 of my starts. And everyone knows on the West Coast that he is, you know, definitely an A-plus operation running out of Roseville, California. So I'm very lucky to, like I said, just to be aligned with such great people, you know, back at the shop that give me such fast race cars to drive.
Okay. Now, joining me tonight as our co-host is James Bickford. And I know he has some questions for you, so I'm going to pass the mic over to James.
Awesome. Yeah, I came across a statistic that's even more crazy about this season. Between Todd and Chris together, they have led 1,298 laps of a possible 1,474. So definitely a phenomenal season. Now, Todd, for the listeners that weren't able to watch the race or weren't able to attend, describe the Douglas race for everybody. I heard it was an exciting race. You and Chris had some great battles. Describe the closing laps throughout the distance of the race and how it ended up being one of those finishes to remember.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the race, we qualified third. You know, we kind of rode there for the first 20 laps, I'd say, and just trying to really be smooth on the gas and you know, just save our tires as good as we could for the end when we knew we'd be racing, you know, Chris Eggleston side by side. So I think it was around halfway where we really tried to get to the lead on a restart. We were second, and no, I think that's where it really started. We started racing side by side, and no, I'd just get a nose ahead, and then Chris would come back strong on the inside, and then it was just really a back and forth battle that neither of us could really get an edge on each other. So that's pretty fun. It's pretty cool also, and at the end we were you know, trying to get through lap traffic as quick as he could. I had a few car length lead on him, and then he was able to close right back up and take advantage of a little slip that I made in lap traffic. So No, he got by me there, and then, you know, with about two or three laps to go, it really heated up when I tried to, you know, get into him a little bit to get him up out of the groove and, you know, get right back side by side again.
Yeah, and ended up coming up on top and coming home with your 13th win, 17 total in the K&N series for anybody that didn't follow along with the E-Series. He also has four wins. Now, being in such a competitive car and having races like you've had at Douglas, how have you matured as a driver over the year? How has this pushed you? If you were to look back to when you won your first race in 2014 and even before that, looking back on it, how have you improved as a driver over the years?
Yeah, I feel like actually the race at Douglas County Speedway last year was a big maturing moment for me because, you know, me and my teammate Chris Eggleston got together there and we actually both spun out and got sent to the back. So, and that took us both out of contention for the win. And I think from there on, I really tried to, you know, stay out of that kind of trouble. You know, we definitely had a talk with Bill and Chris and I, and, you know, we knew you know, that we can't be doing that to each other. We both put each other in a vulnerable spot. And I think ever since then, I've tried to race a little bit different, a little bit smarter. And you know, I think I get more mature with every single race. So, you know, with everything you learn, you always take that to the next one.
Got it. And it's definitely been entertaining to watch for all of us to see somebody be so dominant in a series. Now, you're born in 2000. For anybody that is wondering on an age of such an impressive stat for a driver, do you feel like it's been an advantage for you in your career to be a younger driver competing in such a series and being dominant, or you think age is just a number for you at this point?
Yeah, that's a tough one, I think. You know, with being younger, I feel like it takes a little bit of the pressure off to, you know, in my first K&N start, now I was 15 years old, and, you know, people didn't really expect me to, you know, go out and win, and, you know, we were just expecting to go out and finish, and I feel like that was a really great expectations to have, you know, going into any new series. I think that was definitely the right expectation to have, and I think that comes with age a little bit, but I think that's just it. You know, just you can be patient moving up also, so that's always a good thing.
Awesome, and it's been great to watch, and I'll pass it over to Sharon. I'm sure she has some more questions, but yeah, just an impressive driver since 15 years old when he won his first race at Phoenix, so I'm sure she has some more questions for an up-and-coming talent for someone like yourself.
Absolutely. First of all, you mentioned Bill McAnally Racing. They took positions 1, 2, and 3 with yourself, Chris Eggleston, and the rookie, Derek Krause. And I know that's been a fantastic dynamic this season at Bill McAnally Racing with all of the drivers that are racing there. And I know you've talked about this before, Todd, but I want to catch those listeners that might not have heard this before. Talk about the dynamic there at Bill McAnally Racing and how all of that works between the drivers and your team owner, Bill McAnally.
Yeah, I think it's a very open, you know, team. I think everyone shares information very well, you know, as well as helping each other. You know, I was in the position that Derek is in this year, last year, you know, just kind of being the rookie, hadn't been to most of these racetracks. And it's always good just to have someone to go talk to or ask this any simple questions that you have about the racetrack, you know, before you get there. And I feel like that's always a good thing at Bill McAnally Racing, as well as Bill himself. You know, he's won a lot of races at all these little short tracks that he promotes and goes back to every year. So it's great to have, you know, setups that are reliable and also people that are reliable.
Absolutely, Todd. Now, I want to kind of look ahead here because I understand you have a very, very busy week up ahead. You've got testing that you're going to be doing this week. You're also going to be racing in the Can-Am Pro Series East race at Langley Speedway. That's coming up this weekend, as well as you're going to go out to the road track in the Camping World Truck Series at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. And that's a lot of back and forth traveling that you're going to be doing between all of these locations. Talk a little bit about how you prepare for that.
Yeah, you know, that's something we've talked about. This is probably going to be one of the busiest years that I'll ever have. And I think it's just embrace it, you know, really think about how lucky I am to be able to be doing what I'm doing. And it's the time changes and stuff aren't too bad. And just a few plane rides. So it's mostly just excitement. You know, it's tough to wait to get to the racetrack every weekend and just to love to get there and get in the race car.
Okay, and I know you take your racing very seriously, and you've just had a fantastic season, and I know that that's going to continue with these next three races that are left in the Can-Am West. Just so you get a chance to do any of the shout-outs that you want to do, I know your crew chief has been with you through this, the whole thing, Marty Lindley, also, your social media handle so fans know how they can follow you, Todd.
Yeah, you know, I'm lucky to have my crew chief, Chris Lawson, actually, is who's been with me the whole time. And, to have someone like that to lean on from late models all the way up here to through K&N is, is always good. And also Napa Auto Parts, Toyota, TRD, Frontline Enterprises, it's always a great thing to have people there for you to help you move up. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Todd Gilliland _, as well as Facebook, Todd Gilliland. And like I said, just follow along for any updates.
Okay, apologies there. I had the crew chief wrong there. But thank you for the correction, and good luck to you this weekend, both at Langley and at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. We're wishing you the best.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care now.
Yep.
All right. That was Todd Gilliland in our winner's circle tonight. Fantastic win. And again, this is a do-not-miss race for fans of the Can-Am Pro Series West, of any kind of racing for that matter, because it was a back and forth race throughout the evening. Four lead changes between Chris Eggleston and Todd Gilliland in the closing 25 laps of the race, and that will air again. The Clint Newell Toyota 150 will be on NBC Sports Network this Saturday, September 2nd at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Next up for the Can-Am Pro Series West is the Napa Auto Parts Idaho 208 at Meridian Speedway. That's going to be on Saturday, September the 30th. So definitely mark your calendars for that one as well. You can always follow along at Race Central on NASCAR Home Tracks. Fantastic conversation with Todd Gilliland.
Yeah, it's great, and I'm really looking forward to hearing how Meridian goes. That track is definitely interesting for K&N cars to go to. If anybody doesn't know, it's a tight bull ring, not too many places to avoid wrecks or anything, debris on the track. It's a very narrow, short, small oval, hardly an oval. It's more like a circle track that it's very interesting to see at the K&N Series. Great fans that come out to Idaho as well. So I'm sure they're going to be cheering on their favorite driver, and I would bet it's probably going to be either Todd or Chris if they've been following along this season. So going to be interesting to see how Chris and Todd figure out their battles going forward and who will be the decided champion of the 2017 season.
And by the way, it's just as tight in the Can-Am Pro Series East, where he is second in the series point standings to Harrison Burton. And I believe he could be, there's certainly the potential there for him to be a champion in both series. So that could be groundbreaking history for that series if that should happen.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be one to watch, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he has in the future and see how he competes at higher levels.
Yes, indeed. And we will get a chance to see him race in the Camping World Truck Series this week. Now, let's talk about Kyle Benjamin, because he's coming up here in just a few minutes. Kyle Benjamin has been racing in three different series as a Joe Gibbs Racing Development driver. He's raced in the Can-Am Pro Series East. He won at Greenville Pickens earlier this year. He's also raced in the ARCA Racing Series with a victory at Winchester Speedway. And then who can forget the Iowa Speedway race in the Xfinity Series where Ryan Preece won, but it was Kyle Benjamin who came in second in that race. He's had a fantastic season.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. The one that sticks in everybody's mind is the Iowa race. It was incredibly exciting. He was right there towards the end. Now, he has an average start of 1.8 in the Xfinity Series, which is almost impossible to believe. That's one of the best qualifying efforts I've ever seen in averages. But, yeah, he's had four starts with the best finish, the second at Iowa in the Xfinity with a pole at Pocono. So he's definitely been dominating the Xfinity Series and still racing, local races around and dominating at that level too. So excited to have him on and excited to get to speak with him on the show.
Absolutely. He's got one more race that he'll be racing in the Xfinity Series. That will be coming up on September the 23rd. At Kentucky Speedway, and you're right, he's had just fantastic finishes this season in all of his series, but the Xfinity Series in particular, it's just been incredible, the season that he's had. I'm looking forward to talking to him about being a Joe Gibbs Racing Development driver as well and what that has meant for him. Because that's quite an honor for any driver to be part of a development of a top-tier team such as Joe Gibbs Racing. So with that, I want to make sure that fans get to know Kyle during our show tonight. So we'll probably ask him a few other questions that might find behind the driver of Kyle Benjamin and who he is.
Yeah, I have one interesting question for Kyle tonight. We'll see how he handles being put on the spot. This one's going to be pretty interesting, and we'll see if he can think quick on his feet. He's a smart kid, so I'm sure he'll be able to handle the question I have for him.
Oh, I'm sure he will. And he's got some interesting hobbies that he does when he's not racing as well. And we'll talk a little bit about those as well. So definitely looking forward to chatting with him. He'll be up on board here in a couple of minutes. But while we're waiting, let's talk for a few minutes about the ARCA Racing Series and Austin Terrio's victory. There were some other great finishes in that series, I know Riley Herbst, who is another previous Can-Am West driver, he came in second in his number 18 NAS Energy car, and he's also a Joe Gibbs Racing Development driver.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the transition over from the Can-Am series into Joe Gibbs equipment at ARCA. He's done exceptionally well with it, and to be able to come home with a second place finish really states his position in the series. And I'm looking forward to seeing him perform even better as he develops with the series and gets a little bit more seat time in those cars. And it's going to help a tremendous amount when I'm sure he's coming up on a a Camping World Truck Series debut and being able to race a little bit more in National Series racing. So I'm sure all of this racing from the K&N Series to the ARCA Racing Series is going to play a huge part into his career moving forward as he starts to step into the National Series racing.
And just some quick news about the ARCA Racing Series, too. Zane Smith, who lost his ride recently, was picked up by MDM Motorsports, and so he will be behind the wheel for them in the upcoming races with the ARCA Racing Series. And their next race is at DeCoin State Fair, the General Tire Grabber 100. That will take place on September the 4th. At 3 p.m. Central Daylight Time. So something for fans to look forward to there as well. But with that, let's go ahead and move on to our guest, Kyle Benjamin, a Joe Gibbs Racing Development driver. And I'll tell you what, Kyle, you've had one fantastic season as you've been racing between K&N Pro Series, ARCA Racing Series, and the Xfinity Series, where you've had really phenomenal success. What's it like being able to transition between all these different series and working with a top-tier team like Joe Gibbs Racing?
It's been a lot of fun, mostly being surrounded by the people I'm surrounded by. I've had a lot of fun this year. I haven't been a whole lot of races in general, but a lot of good ones. Like you said, it's a lot of fun transitioning in and out of different cars. I think it makes you a better driver, learning to be able to figure out the differences between what each car needs. But being a part of Joe Gibbs Racing this year has been a great opportunity, and just really glad to be a part of that team.
Absolutely. Talk a little bit about who your go-to people are when you're racing these different series. Is there one particular person that you work with at Joe Gibbs Racing as kind of a coach, or are there different people that you talk to depending on the track that you're racing?
So far, just Kyle Busch has been pretty much the only person I've gone to over in that camp for advice. He's done a good job helping me, giving me great advice. You know, he's one of the best in the sport, and it's a really good teacher also. So he's been really cool to have him in your corner.
I would say so. You couldn't ask for a better coach than Kyle Busch. Now, with us tonight is our co-host, James Bickford, and I know he's biting at the bit. He's got some questions for you as well, so I'm going to pass the mic over, all right?
Okay.
So, been in a lot of cars, been through so many different series. For you in the Xfinity Series, what have been the hardest challenges that you've had to face transitioning to that level of competition?
First off, the field is so deep. All the guys are so talented. It's hard on that part. Also, the low downforce package. Those cars are a handful, especially the mile-and-a-half track. And really just putting a whole race together, they're so long, and the race will change so much throughout the race. You got to play each segment and really be on top of your game and not make any mistakes is the biggest thing. It's just so hard to run in front in one of those races.
And understandably so. I guess that's why it's the second highest division in NASCAR, and it's definitely a deep field. And the Xfinity drivers we've talked to before on the show have described the same thing. Now, you've overcome the qualifying aspect of it with a pole at Pocono and second place, rounding out the rest of your qualifying efforts. What has contributed to your dominant qualifying performance this year in the Xfinity Series so far?
Well, so far, what's really helped me the most is the fact that you got the K&N Series and ARCA Series. They're so good at getting you ready for the bigger cars and being up in the, you know, trucks and Xfinity cars that it's not too big of a transition except for the low downforce package. And also, you know, the people I'm surrounded by, my teammates and my team members, have done a good job, you know, making me know what to expect in those cars when I got to qualify and knowing the differences between, you know, ARCA and Xfinity. So they've really sped up the learning curve, and I think that's the biggest part of why I've been able to go out and qualify so good.
Yeah, and it's definitely showed, and it's awesome to see the development series being able to train you going into National Series racing and preparing you for that stage, and it's obviously showed through your qualifying results, and and also races that are coming up and that have been before. I'm sure Sharon has some more questions, and I'll have some follow-up after.
Okay, Kyle. I want to talk a little bit about how you got started in racing and kind of your progression up the racing ladder, if you will. You've been racing since you were 14, which is kind of surprising. Did you do any? Is that just late model racing, or did you do other racing before that?
Well, I started off when I was five. I pretty much been racing my whole life. Started in go-karts, Bandoleros, Pro Challenge, and then Pro Late Model when I was 12, and then Super Late Models, I think, at 14. Then after that, it was ARCA, K&N, Xfinity. So, just being able to get the most laps you can and being all those different cars and learning the aspects of circle track racing is, big, especially being able to pull from all the experience I've had. Like I said, I'm starting out since 5 years old, and racing all those different series has really helped me.
It really has. And you've had success in the CRA Super Late Model as a champion. You're a race winner at South Alabama Speedway, a World Series of Asphalt champion in the Super Late Models. That's always a big race every year. You've got two Pro Late Model wins, 15 Pro Challenge Series wins, and then 16 Super Late Model race wins. And we've talked about all of the other wins that you've had. You're also a CRA Super Late Model Southern Regional Champion in 2013. Let's talk for a minute about some of the things that you enjoy when you're off the track, Kyle, because you've got some really interesting hobbies that you do here between snowboarding, mountain biking, hunting, and golf. Which is your favorite there?
Snowboarding by far. I'm really big on that. I do that a ton in the wintertime. And it falls at a good time because it's in the off season, so I have plenty of time to do it. But, yeah, by far, that's definitely my favorite.
Okay. And then what about the other sports? How did you get involved with those?
Mountain biking, mostly for fitness. I do like doing it, though, and enjoy especially the downhill sections. But got to work for the downhills by doing the uphills. So, and in racing, I think you got to, that stuff's really important, too. If you get tired in the seat and fall out of the seat at the end of the races, you're not going to be on your game in the final stages where you got to make all your moves to win. So I think it's really important to stay in shape and do all that, which is, part of the reason I mountain bike, too.
Okay. It sounds a little Jimmy Johnson-esque, if you will, because he's a big bike rider as well. And I think it also highlights, Kyle, just the importance of your fitness to be a good race car driver. It's probably part of the difference between somebody who's good and somebody who becomes a great race car driver.
Yeah, definitely. I've been there before. I've been tired and, in my younger years racing before I started doing all that. It's not a good feeling at the end because you feel like you're not on your game and as, mentally sharp as you could be if you weren't tired, and that's when I decided to start doing it. I think it's really cool because if you're not tired at the end, you're thinking better and you're able to, your motor functions are faster and your reflexes are faster, making better decisions. So I think it's huge, especially when you get running like Xfinity and Cup on a hot summer day. It makes a big difference.
Absolutely, because the heat in the car, I understand, can get more so than the air temperature that most people are familiar with. It could be a good 20 degrees more inside your race car. And drivers lose a lot of weight during every race on those hot days. So how do you guys deal with that? I know hydration is really important, but what other things do you do to keep yourself fit inside the race car?
Like I said, most of the mountain biking and running and all that, but also hydrating. You got to start 2 to 3 days before. That's really important too. You can be in good shape and not be hydrated and still, get really exhausted and almost pass out in the seat if you don't drink enough water. Because like you said, you lose so much water weight, you sweat so much inside the car, and it's pretty much a sauna. So you got to drink as much as possible, and you got to, like I said, start 2 to 3 days before to make sure that you're hydrated enough to race.
Okay. James, I'm going to go back to you with the mic here.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here, and it's going to make you think a little bit, but everyone has a good app idea, application on your phone. Now, if you could come up with your own application, had all the resources to do it, what would that application be?
I'm pretty sure it's already invented, but the one that I would do would be one where you can turn all the lights and shut your garage door when you're not at home, because I feel like I leave my garage door open a lot and leave all the lights on my house. So that'd be the most helpful, but really I can't think of anything that probably hasn't been invented before.
That's a good point. I guess
they thought of everything.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's already been invented. I guess your follow-up would be some type of reminder to close your garage door, and then it senses if it's already up or not. Taking away from it, where are you originally from? Where was your birthplace?
South Carolina, easily. We're actually right up by Greenville Pickens. I'm only 2 miles away from Greenville Pickens, and that's where I grew up.
Gotcha. And do you still live there now, or are you in Charlotte?
I still live here now. It's kind of funny, too. I haven't really raced that track much yet growing up. 2 miles away from it, I've only been there probably 4 or 5 times in my life, so that's probably one of the coolest tracks in NASCAR. A lot of history behind it, too.
Yeah, I guess some more future races, but have you ever moved out and transitioned to a different living environment than where you're at now?
Yeah, I actually have. I had an apartment up in North Carolina back when I was a development driver for Roush Fenway, and I was up in the shop, doing all the pit practice and stuff like that. I was up there 4 days a week. I still lived at home part-time, but was gone for probably half the week. So that was a good experience, and probably going to end up moving back up there this summer or this winter.
Got it. What were the differences for you moving back and forth from South Carolina? They're pretty similar, but there probably were some distinct differences between the two.
Yeah, I think, North Carolina is definitely, well, not North Carolina, but, the Mooresville area is racing central. So when you get up there, it's like everything NASCAR, which I kind of like. You don't really see that much around here. I like being involved in the sport, having, all the teams around you, everything. Like, if you got to eat somewhere, you got a lot of, bodies hanging in there. Just everything's kind of NASCAR'd up. I do like living up there. I feel like that's more my alley or more of my speed. So I definitely prefer North Carolina over South Carolina, and really looking forward to getting back up there.
Gotcha. And so working with so many different teams, we've all had experience with different crew members. Which crew member, in your opinion, since you've started racing, whether it was when you first started or now, what has been the most interesting crew member that you've met, most interesting personality on your team?
Most interesting personality? Okay, I got one. You probably know him too. Mamba. The MDM team. I'm sure you've met him. Yeah, he's definitely the most interesting personality I've met or seen, especially at a racetrack, but really just in daily life. So, I mean, he's always bouncing off the walls and tons of enthusiasm.
Is there any distinct story that made him surpass all the other crew members? Because I'm sure there's plenty of interesting personalities. What made him come first to your mind?
It's funny. There's no distinct story. It's kind of the way he is, and he's been on my team so much, over at the MDM team, that it's just kind of just a bunch of different situations that I've been in with him that it just sticks out in my mind. There was one time where we were at, I think it was Dominion, and it rained, and he's wearing goggles, like Speedo goggles that you swim in, and then white boots at a racetrack. And you just got to know him. He's kind of goofy, too. I don't know exactly what he was saying when that was going on. He's over there kicking puddles and stuff. It was funny. But he's definitely the biggest personality I've seen at a racetrack.
Now, speaking of Dominion, there was a pretty interesting story that happened there where some tempers were flared. Now, I was at that race. If I remember correctly, he was the one that kind of pulled you away from walking to another driver's pit box. Describe that story.
He probably did. I'm sure he's right on top of that. If there was somebody to pull me away, I'm sure it was him. But, that was a tough deal. Wish we were able to close that race out, and we let every single lap of it. But you know, stuff happens in racing, and just it was unfortunate.
Yeah, and describe to everybody for the listeners, they that haven't been in a race car, haven't experienced being in a race. What really drives a driver to have that temper flare? I mean, I've had it in my career, and I know almost every other driver has had it, where you felt like something was done to wrong you, and it brings it to that point. What for you has brought that to your point? What's your breaking point as a driver to go over to somebody and confront them?
Well, first off, I don't really know what happens when you put a helmet on, but it's like it completely changes you. I'm not the same person out of the car that I am in a race car. I get mad way easier, and I don't know why, and I feel like everybody's that way. So I can't really explain it. What I can say is I got road rage inside of a car, so, like, it doesn't take much. You got to control it, but as you probably know, you're a different person behind the wheel for whatever reason.
Yeah, we noticed that with a lot of drivers. Cole Custer, you and I both know, is a great example of that. Quiet, super quiet guy. But just like any driver, it brings out your personality when you get wrecked or you felt like you're in a position to win and you got so close, but then somebody comes and takes it away from you. It really just changes your whole perspective as who you are as a person. To who you are when you get out of that car after you strapped on that helmet, you just become a totally different person. But definitely interesting. I'll pass it back over to Sharon. I'm sure she has some more questions for you.
Okay. I think you've done a great job here of kind of addressing some unusual aspects of racing. And actually, that's not so unusual. I think that probably happens to a lot of drivers. But, Kyle, I want to get into your team a little bit. I know you talked about one particular crew member, but I'm just curious, as you change from Canon West or Canon East into ARCA into the Xfinity Series, are you working with the same team or does your team change up a bit as you race the different series?
It changes. So I'm with MDM in ARCA and Canon. And then in Xfinity, I'm with JGR in totally different crews. Well, really different organizations in general.
Okay. So what is that like making the adjustment between all these different people that you're working with within all these different organizations?
It really hasn't been bad. Like I said, I've been surrounded by good people. So Marty Lindley with the team, he's probably one of my favorite crew chiefs of all time. I really love, you know, going to the track, hanging out with them, you know, racing with him, and then going over to Xfinity, having, you know, Chris Gabehart and then Eric Phillips really bring me up to speed fast and kind of be my teacher for the first four races has been really helpful.
Okay. And then, two, I want to talk about you've got a race coming up at Kentucky Speedway. Are you doing anything special to prepare for that race, or is that a track you've raced at before?
Yeah, I've made some test laps on it. I've never raced it, so at least I know. Well, actually, you know, I can't pull from that because it's on the old Kentucky before they paved it. So technically, no, I haven't been there since they paved it, so it's going to be totally different this time. But I actually have one race before in ARCA at Chicagoland. It's actually the weekend before Kentucky.
Right, right. And a lot of people say it's kind of similar between Chicagoland and Kentucky. They both have those bumps. But now with the new surface, it could be a little bit different. And then I know that we talked earlier that you do some racing when you're not racing, as you know, in those three series that we've already mentioned. What racing are you doing in between your other races?
So I had six Xfinity races total this year, and then in between those, I've had ARCA and Canaan. You know, all in all, I haven't ran a lot of races all year, so there really hasn't been many fill-in races, not as much as I would have liked to have had. It's just been kind of a slow year.
Oh, okay. I was thinking you were doing some other off racing between those three series. So let's... Let's talk about your crew chief, Marty Lindley, and what it's been working with him, because I know he's a big part of your success.
He was a huge part of it. He's probably one of the smartest people in Canaan and local crew chief was. I think he's got them all beat right now. The cars are really fast at MDM. And even last year we had very fast cars. I think they're even better now. He keeps improving every single year. He's had a lot of success. Back to him having Dylan Kwasniewski a while ago. They ran good, won the championship. Just a great guy, aside from the fast cars. He's a great person, really takes care of you outside the race car, away from the track and at the track. Role model type guy. So really like to be around him and, have him crew chief in the car.
Okay. Before you go, I want to make sure fans have your social media handles, Kyle. I want to say thank you for being on the show with us and being willing to answer some of our questions that are a little different than what we normally ask.
No, it's all good. It's been fun.
Okay, great. And your social media handles?
Kyle Benjamin _. That's the new one.
That's the new one. And that's at Twitter. Are you on Facebook as well, Kyle?
Yeah. Just Kyle Benjamin on Facebook and then Kyle Benjamin on Instagram as well.
Okay. So that makes it pretty easy. Kyle, again, thanks so much for being here. And good luck to you at a Kentucky Speedway later in the month of September. We're looking forward to watching your race again in the Xfinity Series there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on.
Take care now.
You too.
All right. Another interesting conversation here with Kyle Benjamin, Joe Gibbs Racing development driver. He couldn't ask for a better coach than Kyle Busch. And Kyle Busch is so notorious. I think he's notorious now as a mentor for a lot of the new drivers coming into the sport. And these drivers are like Kyle Benjamin. It seems like they're sponges picking up as much as they can from a driver like Kyle Busch.
Yeah, it's anybody that has experience in the cars that you've been in and been extremely successful goes so far in your racing career. It's great for drivers to have that person to lean on for information, because if you have somebody that isn't very experienced and leads you the wrong direction, or if you don't have somebody like that, it can really lead you in the wrong direction on your racing path. And I know a lot of drivers fight for that, trying to break in to racing in general, and they don't have that person, and it really would help them further in their racing and driver development to have that person. It's great for Kyle Busch. I mean, who can be better than that? So it's definitely something that goes far in your racing, and something that can definitely benefit a driver that's developing like Kyle Benjamin.
Absolutely, and I think we'll see a lot more of Kyle Benjamin as he continues to develop his career there at Joe Gibbs Racing. I enjoyed the interesting backstory with Kyle as well, so thank you for that, James. Really appreciate it. I just want to take a moment here to also remind fans, we introduced Andrew Lasky on our Thursday night show as a new writer at fanforracing.com, and he's got an article that we're going to be publishing here in a few days about the 2017 playoffs in the NASCAR Xfinity, in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. And he's got some interesting insight there that we'll be sharing with fans. But he's also going to be a part of our Fan for Racing radio team as well. In the month of September, he will be on from 10 p.m. until 10:30 p.m. every Thursday night this month for kind of our revisit the NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off segment that we used to do. And we'll discuss all the hot topics in NASCAR along with Jay M.J. Huseman on Thursday nights. And then on the Monday nights that he's available, which there may only be a few in the month of September, he'll also join us on the Monday night show, the after show, from 10 until 10:30, again for the NASCAR Sound Off, Hot Topic Sound Off. And again, we'll visit the topics from the weekend of racing that are hot news topics. So we're really happy to have Andrew Lasky as a part of our show and as a part of the website. He used to be with us back in 2012 during the early years of Fan for Racing, and it's going to be good to have him back again. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's great to have new people
all
on.
All right.
I mean, I'm one of them.
Go ahead.
But we'll move on. We'll move on to Reed Wilson. But it's great to have new people on and new information. It's definitely been interesting as myself to be a new addition to the last 3 weeks to fill in. So excited for him to be a part of the team and provide new information.
And speaking of that, James, I do want to take time right now to tell you thank you so much for all that you've done these past 3 weeks while filling in for our regular co-host, Sal Sagala. You've been a fantastic co-host with me these last 3 weeks. You've supported us in finding guests for the show, and you've brought a kind of a different flavor to the show and the interviews, because you know some of these drivers personally and can kind of delve into some things that we might not normally delve into. So, again, thank you so much for being here the last 3 weeks. I'm going to miss you as we move forward, but we hope you'll keep in mind as a guest co-host again sometime in the future.
Yeah, of course. I'm always glad to be hosting and to be on. It's been interesting. Living in Charlotte does have its advantages. Believe it or not, it's given me opportunity to see these drivers on somewhat of a regular basis, and when I'm at the track to catch up with them and get a little bit of a personal background. So it gives me a little bit of an advantage asking questions because I know the personalities of the drivers and I know what they're thinking. And I've been behind the wheel and looking forward to getting behind the wheel again. So it's one of those things where it brings a new atmosphere once you approach it at a personal level and get to hear what the drivers have behind the steering wheel, you know, behind the scenes and what they're doing and just really how they think. You have to be awfully intelligent to make your way up into the National Series racing. It's not just driving. There's so many other perspectives and aspects to getting into a National Series ride. And one of those is having a personality and having a bright mind on your shoulders. So it's definitely been an honor to be on the show, and I always look forward to talking about racing. It's what I do.
Okay, well, it certainly has been fun. Let's go ahead and get into our next guest, Reed Wilson. You talked a little bit about him at the beginning, but for those people who may have missed the beginning, let's do the build-up for him now.
So Reed Wilson is a Canaan East driver who has participated in a few races in 2016 and a few races in 2017, performed very well for a new team, Young's Motorsports, in the K&N Series. Young's being a Camping World Truck Series competitor with drivers of Austin Hill and Tyler Young himself. So he's looking forward to getting into the Truck Series towards the end of this year, if not the beginning of next year. So he's another one of those development drivers breaking into National Series racing. And fortunately, I've got a chance to meet Reed Wilson and been friends with him for over a year now. And he is quite an interesting personality. He was on a podcast a week ago or a few weeks ago where he got to show everybody his true self and really, really have an interesting conversation there. So I'm looking forward to having him on and being able to bring that aspect into this show and show his personality there. So he is a very exceptional talent of racing. He's done a great job, and he's one of those guys that you just really want to see succeed because you want to put him in front of a camera, you want to put him in front of a microphone and hear what he has to say because he's just that interesting of a person in general. So, like I said, looking forward to talking to Reed Wilson. He should be calling in here any bit, any moment, and he's just one of those talented guys that also has a very interesting background.
Well, I'm looking forward to learning more about him. Our regular listeners will know that we've had Todd Gilliland on the show several times before. We've had Kyle Benjamin on the show before, and this will be a first, I think, with Reed Wilson coming on the show with us, and I hope the first of many visits here at Fan for Racing Radio, and definitely looking forward to learning more about him. I know that he's about to make a breakthrough here as far as coming into the national scene, and as you mentioned, racing in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series either late this year or the early part of next year, and he's going to be a driver to watch as that continues to develop. And James, before he comes on, I want to tell you, if you get a ride, I want to be sure to stay in touch with us because I'd like to have you come on the show and talk about that as well.
And I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of talk. It's going to be an emotional experience for myself. I've been out of the car for so long that hopefully if everything lines up, I'll be racing towards the end of the year. And I'd be more than happy to share my emotions of getting back into a car and the real struggle it's been to put myself in that position. But yeah, it's Reed is one of those drivers that's very similar, has dealt with those struggles, and it's a tough environment. You got to get your foot in the door. You have to perform, and I'm hoping to do the same thing towards the end of this year, if not the beginning of next year, to get behind that steering wheel again, and to prove, you know, what I have is my driving talent.
Absolutely. Now, Reed's here now if you want to go ahead and do the introductions and get started with his interview.
So, Reed Wilson, back on here with us on the show, first time. Now, Reed, I first have to ask you, we're going to take it straight off of racing. How has life been? How has everything been going in your time out of the car? What have you been up to?
You guys can hear me, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm actually walking into Walmart right now. That's my life. That's pretty much been my life. I'm in Nashville with my girlfriend right now. Oddly enough, I'm looking more into the music industry nowadays. You know, racing's fun and all. I love it. And we're working on merging both worlds. It's going to be weird and hard, but fun. I'll tell you that.
It will add a different aspect to driving for sure. It's definitely something that I'm sure a lot of people have looked into, merging, you know, two careers together, and, you know, being able to be in a Camping World Truck Series and use that fan base leverage to also promote music would be interesting. I was actually in a Walmart earlier today buying 150 pounds of flour, so I understand that. Now tell.
Why were you buying 150 pounds of flour? What are you doing with that? What are you doing, dude?
150 pounds of flour to set up an autocross track. Believe it or not, that's part of the driving experience world.
What, you guys are driving through flour nowadays? Can you not afford dirt?
Correct.
Or what's going on?
We set up flour to just run through. No, we set up lines to distinguish a track for an autocross track. Now
okay, that's kind of cool.
You've been in the racing world for a long time, trying to get into a car. Tell us about your early days getting into racing. What propelled you into getting into a car for the first time?
Well, I was actually 7 years old. Actually probably six when I figured out that I could actually race cars, the summer shootout in Charlotte. I went and watched. They have it every Tuesday during the summer. Some kid, Jake the Snake, Jake Crum, signed an autograph for me. Loved it. I was like, whoa, this kid's like 7 or 8 years old. I'm 6. I can do this. And then on top of that, what really sparked it was I actually got to interview Jeff Gordon for a school magazine when I was 7 years old. Isn't that funny, James? Isn't that cool?
That's amazing.
Yeah, Jeff Gordon, you know, he was like, you know, I just do it. You know, you just got to go for it. So me, you know, without any background in racing or any family member in racing, decided to go and do it. So here I am. I'm still struggling, you know, or not struggling, but I'm still working my way up there. Still climbing the ladder today. Ran Bandos, Legends, then ran a couple late model series, and finally in K&N and moving up to trucks here soon. Just as long as everything goes right, we'll just keep steadily moving up till we get there.
Now, it has to be humbling, especially for myself. When you go to a local track with kids racing, whether it's Bandoleros, Legends, or, you know, local track like Millbridge, you see all the drivers that are in that area, the pit area, trying to work their way up. Very few of them make it to the K&N series, and even more limited amount get it to the Camping World Truck Series. To have that conversation being started of racing in the Truck Series, what is that like for you as a driver to be looking at such a getting into National Series racing? That has to be a big deal.
It's a dream come true. I couldn't imagine. I couldn't find words exactly to explain how that feels. You know, it's amazing. I never thought that I'd really get to this point. Even this point, me talking on the phone in front of these people at Walmart, and they think I'm an idiot for talking like I'm, you know, on an interview on the phone. No, I'm serious. I'm getting really weird looks. But back to the point, I never thought that I'd get to this point. I never did. There were a lot of people that doubted me. There were a lot of people that supported me and said, you know, you put your mind to it, you practice, you know, you can get there. But there were a lot of people that told me, why even try? Why put in the effort, put in the money? And I almost let them. I almost believed that a couple times, but I don't know. I just kind of pushed through, and things worked its way out. God found his way to tell me where I should be, and that's where I am now. It's amazing. It really is.
It's definitely an amazing story to come from a first generation racing family and to work your way up into doing that. And there's plenty of people in everybody's road that tell you to stop, to tell you to quit. And some do that, and then some push through. And that's who you see in the National Series racing and also K&N. Now moving forward just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
What made you pick number 66 and why stick with it?
Actually, I started as 92 when I started, all the way up until I was about 13. 92, because why not, I guess. I played football at the time, and I was number 10 or number 89, both of those, like on-off. 92 came into the picture because when we bought my Bandolero car, the kid that drove it before me, his number was 92, and I was like, that's a cool number. Let's keep it. It's not, there's not really much original behind that. Like, there's not no meaning like, oh, this is cool. Or like, oh, I want to be 25 because my cousin's 24. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep the ball rolling here. 66 came along. I actually totaled my car. Or my legend car when I was 92. It was a big deal at the time for me. It was hard to get the money together to go racing again. My crew chief had a car, and he was always 66. The team's number was always 66 or 76. I was teammates with Darrell Wallace Jr. drove Legends. He was 76 on like kind of a teammate with me. So like 66, 76 was always those numbers. And my crew chief offered his car for a really great price to go racing again. And we found the money and did it. So I kind of just kept that. You know, I finally felt accepted somewhere on a team. So that's why I kept 66, and I've kept it throughout the years because that was kind of like a revelation or like the beginning of a new me, you could say.
There you go. I guess it takes a new start or it takes an end to get to a new beginning. Now, you've mm-hmm. raced at a few tracks that are on the Cup schedule, Bristol, New Hampshire, and you've had a chance to race basically all over the place. List your favorite tracks compared to your least favorite tracks, and then a story of why.
Okay. I've in K&N, I've ran New Hampshire, Iowa, Bristol, Greenville, New Smyrna. The most memorable ones, I would say, would be Iowa and Bristol. Bristol is a track where you either love it or you hate it. There's no middle. There's no like, oh, we had an okay race. It was either like, this car was hooked up, it was awesome, or this was the worst car I've ever had. I wanted to shoot myself 10 laps into the race. That type of car. Like, that's how the track is. I had a bad race at Bristol. I do not like Bristol. I do not want to go back to Bristol. I know I'm going to have to go back. But, oh, my, I did not have a fun time. Iowa was probably the coolest little track that I've ever been to. I was actually talking to one of my friends before the race, and he had run there before as well. And he told me that it was the craziest experience ever. Nuts. You know, you can't get better than Iowa. It's like a miniature mile and a half mixed with like a short track mentality. I was like, okay, all right, sure. All right. No, it really is. You can run three lanes there. You can switch from the top to the bottom lane in the middle of the corner if you really want to. And if you got a decent car, you're a decent driver, you can take control of wherever you are in the race. Another thing is it's both the East and the West combined. So there's so many cars there and everybody's so competitive. You're never by yourself. You're either chasing somebody down, having an insane battle with somebody, or being chased. So I had the time of my life. We didn't finish well. We got up to the top 10, which was pretty cool. And then the last restart, guy blew his right front and put us in, or we ended up in the wall. Ended up like 15th, but it was like I still got out of the car happy. Like, it was fun.
Yeah, that's I've been there four times. It's one of the best tracks.
Oh, really?
One of my favorite tracks as well. And it's the track that everybody circles on their schedule just because it's so much fun. Anyways, I'll pass the questions back over to Sharon.
Agree.
And it's definitely interesting. But I'll pass it over to Sharon. I'm sure she has some questions to ask you following up.
Yep.
Okay, Reed. Thanks so much for being on the show with us. We appreciate you taking the time out to be here. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to get into you mentioned earlier that you had a chance to interview your childhood hero, Jeff Gordon, and how much that meant to you. I kind of suspect that you mean you do some things, too, that mean a lot to other young boys and girls, especially as it relates to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and their summer camps. Talk a little bit about your involvement there and why that has a special place for you in your NASCAR
mm-hmm.
racing career.
I actually got involved with the MDA when I was like 11 years old. I was racing like Bandolero cars at the time, or for those that don't know what Bandoleros are, they're like a glorified go-kart with a roll cage. It's pretty much it. I was running those, like I said, 11 years old. and the NDA holds this event, silent auction type of thing every year, called the Muscle Team event. They pair athletes up with kids, like a little buddy thing, and they have a silent auction throughout the night, a live auction at the end of the night, and it all goes to a good cause. It's great. It's a fun thing. My dad was actually doing some pro bono work with them, like printing out pamphlets or something, and he found out one of the athletes had to cancel at the last second, and he was just like, okay, well, if you guys need somebody, my kid races go-karts. Okay, bring him on, ship it. And and that it kind of started from there. Like, I was always raised, if it doesn't matter where you are in life, you've been blessed in some type of way, and if you have the opportunity to give back, do it. You know, that's just how my parents raised me, and I love it. It gives me the best feeling in the world. On top of that, with the NDA, I've been a buddy with them for, I guess, coming on 10 years now, or just after 10 years now. I'm 21 now, so. And then this just was the third summer that I became I was a counselor at one of their camps. They have camps nationwide, a bunch of different locations. I actually go to the South Carolina location in York, and man, it's a moving experience. You spend a whole week. There's one counselor per camper, so it's one-on-one, you know. I'm one of the more irresponsible counselors, to be honest. My camper is more like my counselor. when we wake up in the morning, he makes sure that I brush my teeth and take a shower. I don't really have to do it's literally switched. But it's like just to really get to know these kids, that NDA. Of course, the NDA, they go on beyond children, but this camp is centered just for children. But to really get to know these kids, it's I can't describe it. But to be part of the best week of some of these kids' lives is rewarding enough just with that.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's a very worthwhile cause, and what a memorable experience for them to have their counselor be a driver that, you know, races Bandolero Legends, go-karts, Camping World Truck Series, whatever you're driving. It's a thrill for these kids to have that kind of exposure and be able to participate in a camp like this. I think it's fantastic what you're doing, and I wanted to make sure that we were able to talk about that here tonight.
Thank you.
You know, I know that you have to be somewhat careful in relaying information there, but is there a story you can share with us that has kind of touched your heart as you've kind of gone through this experience?
There's a lot of stories. I can give you, I'm still in the Walmart. Like, I'm wandering around at this point. I'm lost. I'm in a jungle of hair products at the moment. So I'm going to kind of cut myself here in the corner, away from everybody in case I cry. I'd say one story. There's this little girl named Emily at the camp. She's about 12 years old. This was 2 years ago. She was kind of like on a walker at the point. And that's one thing that you see is like every year you come back to the camp, some of these kids, you'll see some of these kids get better and some of them get a little worse every year, you know? It just depends on where they are or what medicines they're taking, or a lot of these medicines are on trial, or, you know, with the FDA or blah, 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 science stuff, legal stuff, blah, blah, blah. It's a bunch of whatever, but you get what I'm saying. But this girl, Emily,
She had a crush on me. She followed me around. She like she was the cutest girl, the cutest. And we have a dance at the end of camp on Thursdays. And that we kind of have a graduation. Once you turn 18, you can't go to the camp anymore because legally, like, we can't. Like, if you wanted to leave in the middle of the night and you're 18, you can do it. So that's why we have those. But we have a graduation for the 17-year-olds. And everybody gets all emotional. Like, it's rough. And like I said, she's 12, 13. She's, her counselor comes up to me and is like, hey, Emily's bawling her eyes out. Like, she needs you. She's asking for you. And I walk over. I'm like, hey, what's wrong? And she just looks at me and she's just like, I don't want to leave camp. And that's not very significant when you think of yourself as a little kid going to camp and thinking, like, I don't want to leave camp because everyone's so cool. But I mean, that's the same. Everybody, I'm cool. Nobody wants to ever leave me. But this is a place for these kids to not be looked at like they can't do something. They go back out into the world, go to school, and they're put in a different class just because of quote unquote their abilities or disabilities. And these kids aren't any different. They're not any some of them are in wheelchairs, but you put a ramp up and you won't be able to tell the difference between them and a regular person. They're literally not. There are kids that are over there that are beating me in freestyle rap competitions during, like, they're normal. People don't view them as that.
Yeah, I was going to say, It sounds like this camp gives them an opportunity to kind of feel like a regular kid. And, you know, the fact that this young girl didn't want to leave tells you how important that camp really was for her.
Yeah. Or can I share one more story? This one's a shorter one.
Okay.
I was in a cabin. We assigned cabins every summer. There was this kid, Dakota, and he was 16 at the time. This is 2 years ago. And we're just, like, having fun or whatever and talking about something. And he's just, like, it's one of those moments that hit you. And he said, we were talking about cafeteria. That's right. We were talking about cafeteria food. And he just looks at me. He's like, if I ever grow up, I want to come back and cook for the NBA camp. That big Aww. Word that hits you is if I grow up, I don't have to worry about that. You know, they do. Like, it's not even they worry about it. It's just like that's part of their life. They grow up like that. Like, oh, if I grow up, it's heartbreaking. It really is.
It is. And you know, I applaud you for being involved in the organization and giving up your time to those kids that really need someone like you to look up to and to be a part of their lives.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't need to help, though, to be honest. It's the kids that deserve it all. They know how to fight, and they inspire me more than I could inspire any of them.
Absolutely. And you know, it's an honor to be able to do that, I'm sure, and to be a part of their lives. Now, we're going a little bit of overtime, but I want to give James one last chance to kind of bring this more upbeat again and kind of close it out. So,
yes,
but
ma'am.
Thank you so much
for
sharing
your
story.
Time.
It means a lot.
Thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity. You know, if for someone to give me a soapbox to stand on, that means more than anything.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you. James?
Yeah, and bringing on a more update. It's great to talk about the MDA and how you can help, and I'm sure once we get to wrapping it up, Reed will give more information about how you could help as a listener and how to you know, help these kids and also others that are suffering from muscle dystrophy. But bringing on a more upbeat, you've been in Walmart this entire time. What have you had? What do you have in your cart so far? What have you been shopping for?
Well, right now I've actually been playing with the makeups for a little bit. I don't know how makeups work. So, Sandy Beige, Dream Liquid Mousse. Wait, mousse is hair product. I don't know what I'm doing, guys. I've got some vegetable glycerin just because I want to know what that's like. I don't know what the heck that is, so I just want to experience everything here. Some cotton balls. I'm literally just like, while we've been talking, I've been grabbing stuff, putting it down, not putting it down in the wrong place. That's my pet peeve. I put it back in the same place. Everybody who's listening, don't be that person, okay? But grabbing stuff, putting it down, walking around, acting like I'm an actual shopper here instead of on a phone interview. Maybe I should tell people, like, hey, guys, I'm not one of those Walmart shoppers on the phone. This is an interview. Yes, I chose to go to Walmart for this. Stop. Don't judge me. I certainly don't have 150 pounds of flour. But anyways, James, before we wrap this up, because I know you guys have let me go over time, and I thank you so much. I do want to plug those pluggy plugs in the plug first. People are listening, if you like, follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at ReedWilson66, ReedWilson66. You can go and donate to the MDA through us at racing4mda.com. racing4mda.com. Or you can just go ahead and donate straight to the MDA. It doesn't matter. All the money goes straight there. Look into it. You know, if you don't have the money at the time, we're not asking you to throw tons of, you know, your whole wallet at it. Think about it. Think about giving other people the opportunities that you've already had, you know. But thank
That's
you.
Fantastic.
Like I said, thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, we
no,
really
appreciate
you
coming.
You absolutely.
Should I get Burt's Bees? Is that a good chapstick?
What is it? Oh, Burt's Bees.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be pretty good. It's. It's worth trying. Let's put it that way.
I think I might get it. I'm gonna
and
try
then maybe
it. Thank you.
You can try it and come back and tell us how it worked out for you.
I will.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show with us. I know James talked to you about being here, and I'm sure he appreciates you being here as well. And we hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime, especially
of
when
course.
You have some news about your Camping World Truck Series debut. We'd love to have you come back on the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for having me on again, and I would love to be on anytime.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. Where are you going to be racing next?
Our plan is the Truck Series Martinsville and in October. You know, in racing, deals happen, then don't happen, or don't happen, then happen. You know how the whole thing goes. But our plan
right.
is, and it's looking
right.
pretty rock solid, to debut Martinsville. We're not sure which team yet. We're still looking. We're still looking at options. We want to get this right. You know, we want our debut to be good. And actually make the field at least. So, but Martinsville Truck, that's what we're looking for. That should be the last race that we do this year unless things go great. But yeah.
Okay, well, we'll definitely keep that in mind. And again, thanks so much for being here. And we wish you the best out there at Walmart as you finish up your shopping experience.
In my never-ending journey through the Walmart aisles to find my way back to my car. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Reed.
Thank you.
Take care now. All right, James, that was Reed Wilson, and kind of an interesting conversation with him as he wanders through Walmart and talks about his racing career and what it means to him. So thanks so much for bringing him on to the show.
Of course, yeah, and it's great to talk about a good cause and also keep it entertaining at the same time. You know, Reed Wilson is always a personality that anytime he's in front of a mic, it's either going to make you laugh and smile or want to help and contribute. So great person to have on the show.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed what he had to say about the Muscular Dystrophy Association and the summer camp that they have there for kids. Now, I just a programming note here. We will not be on air next Monday night. It is Labor Day, and we're taking that Monday night off. But the following Monday, September the 11th, we will be back on the air, hopefully with Sal Segala, our normal co-host. We'll look forward to having him back on air here on Monday nights as we review the weekend of racing. And as I mentioned earlier, we will be back on air this coming Thursday, that's August the 31st, with J.M.J. Huseman. We'll preview the upcoming weekend of racing. And Darlington's going to be a big, big topic on Thursday night with the throwback schemes. Very, very popular weekend in NASCAR. And then, again, we're going to bring back our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with Andrew Lasky starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So definitely looking forward to that as well. Again, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, James, for being here with me the last 3 weeks. And chatting with us about racing. I know you love it, and I love talking about it with you. So it was a good match up here, and we wish you the best. And I hope you do stay in touch with us as we move forward here.
Of course, love being on in New Hampshire right now, traveling and staying busy. And hopefully next time I'll be on, whether it's hosting or hopefully you know, announcing my plans for the future and what I'm doing in my own personal racing. Just takes funding and takes the right opportunity to get there. So, but I love being on, and I love being a part of the show and being able to contribute with different personalities and add a new aspect to it.
Okay, it's been a blast, I'll tell you that, and definitely look forward to talking with you again somewhere down the road here. And I thought you brought a whole different flair to Sanford Racing Radio, and I really appreciate the effort there. So with that, I think we'll call it a wrap, James.
Sounds good. Yep, it's another great show, and looking forward to listening in on the next Monday with hopefully Sal being back.
Okay, September 11th, we look forward to having Sal Segala back as our co-host. So, again, take care, enjoy your race week, and the upcoming weekend of racing. We'll talk to you again here on Thursday night. Good night, everyone. Good night, James.
Good night.